gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour, StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there at the StephanieMiller.com. A big, big show. It's like a cavalcade of guests.
Yes, it is.
With our homegirl, Representative Loretta Sanchez, straight out of the gate. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Hello, and good morning, Stephanie.
I'm excited. I might be able to take high-speed rail to come visit you way behind the orange curtain soon, down in Orange County.
Well, you know, right now there is Metrolink from Los Angeles, but this high-speed rail is really exciting because if you live in Anaheim, you could get on a train, and 2 hours and 20 minutes later, you could be at Fisherman's Wharf. So
right.
It's really a thrill when we think about it. So many other countries already have this. You go to Europe and France and Germany have it. If you go to, over in the Asian countries, even China, it's amazing. So we really need to get with it.
No, I mean, absolutely. We were talking about this, Congresswoman, that especially out here in the West, we really could use, I guess I continue to be surprised at things Republicans are against. It means jobs, it means infrastructure, as you say, it means an investment, you know, in our future that brings us up to speed, just with even with other countries, and they're against it.
Well, investment. I mean, anything that makes Americans more productive is an investment for us. Education, infrastructure, communication, the health of Americans. These are all things that make us healthier, go to work, provide jobs, bringing back the manufacturing base. If we would have this train system, we are talking about bringing back the manufacturing base here, because if you look at, for example, the Red Line or any of those, all of those subway cars and things are made someplace other than the United States.
Right.
We want to build these. We want to build the trains. We want to build them here. We're talking about really great jobs for Americans. And so we need to invest for the future. And the faster you can get someplace, the quicker you can do a face-to-face meeting with people you're trying to get venture capital to start your new firm or, get health care from
right.
the doctor who's located up in San Jose rather than down here in L.A., for example. I mean, this is all important to Americans.
Yep. When you talk about making stuff, I mean, look at the car industry in America. I mean, if that's not a proud moment for all of us, and, you know, you think, look, we can do this. We can out-innovate. We can, and that's why it's just when the president, and this is not $53 billion, you know, is really, as an investment, I think, so smart, don't you?
It's very smart. It's jobs, it's energy efficient, it's stopping the congestion, or at least not creating more congestion on our existing highways. In the long run, it's less expensive for Americans to travel. So so many different reasons, we need to be investing for the future in particular. And, you know, Orange County and California has always been ahead of the curve. We're ready to go. We have clearing all the environmental issues with respect to building this high-speed rail. I mean, we could literally this year start building from Anaheim to Los Angeles, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I know the president has moved some of that money to the Central Valley out to the Fresno area because the unemployment is so high there. But quite frankly, we're ready to go here in Anaheim, and we want to build it.
Yep. Let's talk about the budget, Congresswoman Sanchez. Of course, the first headline is Republicans mock Obama budget. I don't know why. I thought maybe they would be willing partners, you know, since we're. But, I mean, it just, to me, you go, obviously, there's going to be things in this that everybody doesn't like to some degree, right? But, you know, you're going to have partners come to the table, aren't you? I mean,
right.
Obviously, the thing I like the best in it is that he tries to put back in the rich people pay their fair share in taxes, because I just think you cannot hope to address the deficit in a meaningful way without that.
Well, you need revenues. You cannot just stop spending. You also need revenues to bring down because those levels have been so high, those spending levels. By the way, most of which occurred under the 8 years that President Bush was in office and that the Congress was controlled by the Republicans. So they were really probably at least 70% of what's sitting there in debt came from those Republican initiatives. But, you know, we need money to pay some of that down. And, of course, we need to figure out where we can cut things. Now, people, right. You know, people never like cuts. Everybody's in favor of cuts until it's their program or until it's affecting them directly. Well, I just have to tell the people, whether they're Republican or Democrat or a Green Party member or an Independent or a Tea Party member, whatever they are, or right. You know, that they need to understand everybody will have to face some sort of a project eliminated that was their project or a program, a cut back, because all of us need to take responsibility for getting back financially secure for our country. Gates, who is the Secretary of Defense, said about 2 or 3 months ago when he was before the Congress, the single most important issue affecting our national security. Remember, he's the Department of Defense.
Yep.
The single most important thing affecting us is this debt and this deficit situation. We've got to get it under control.
Well, I mean,
everything needs to be on the table. We need to look at everything.
Right. But here's what's going to be frustrating. You know, I know that you're in the Blue Dog Coalition, but as you know, what's going to be frustrating to progressives is, you know, here's the president, I think, in the budget, once again, reaching out again to the other side. I mean, certainly, you know, cutting heating oil for the poor in the Northeast is not going to be something that progressives think is part of where we should have to cut back when, you know, the Republicans out of hand are going to dismiss the, you know, the tax, rich people paying their taxes. You know what
well,
I mean? It's just, it's
certainly we've seen that they think people should be paying no taxes. I mean, that's where they come from. And it's
right.
just wrong because there are certain things that we need. They also are sitting there saying that they want to increase defense spending. And I, you know, sitting 15 years on the defense committee, let me tell you, we've been in two wars now for almost 10 years. And the fact of the matter, 8 years at
right.
least. And the fact of the matter is, when you're at war, you throw money at trying to win the situation. But we're not. You know, we've been at it for a while, so we should
yeah.
know that a lot of this money has been wasted. Some of it has been wasted. It's
well,
been,
I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, John Boehner, the leader, of course, likes to go talk all the time about how he's against earmarks. And, you know, there's an unfortunate story for him today that, of course, you know, that plane that the Pentagon doesn't even want, of course, that he wants built in his home state, in his home district. I mean, it smells like an earmark to me. And yet, you know, here they are talking about once again all the president's cuts are the wrong ones, and that, you know,
yeah.
Yeah,
well,
there's
got to
be.
The president proposes, but the Congress really is the one that does the budget. So we'll sit down, and you know, we Democrats will probably coalesce some blueprint of President Obama's, but not specifically exactly what
right.
he asked for. And then, of course, the Republicans will come with their own proposal. And in the House, they can pass whatever they want because they've got a majority of the votes. But in the Senate, they can't do that. So there
right.
has to be compromise. There has to be moving to the middle. There'll have to be some cuts on some programs that you and I think are very, very important. But there's going to have to be cuts to the things that they think are important or increases in taxes.
Right. But Congresswoman Sanchez, we have some real wild cards in the new House, don't we? With some of these Tea Party candidates. I mean, is there a very real chance that they are going to vote against raising the debt ceiling? If they
There's
don't,
a big chance that they will vote against raising the debt ceiling. You know, and as I've told them, they came to me and they said, "Do we have your vote to raise the debt ceiling?" I said, "You guys are in control. You guys govern. You find your votes." That's what governing,
yeah.
you know, it's easy to sit up there and campaign or to sit up there and scream on TV and say, oh, this is bad, taxes are bad, spending is bad, this is bad. But when you get elected and when you come here, you have to make really tough choices. One of the things is you need to keep the government open and you need to keep the credit markets open and viable. And you don't send the message that, you know, we're defaulting on our loans as a country. I mean, they're going to have
yep.
to find the votes and we're going to make them find them from their side.
Yeah. Yep.
They're in control. They need to govern.
Yep, absolutely. Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, always a pleasure. I hope to take that fancy high-speed rail to come visit you in the very near future.
Great. Perfect. Thanks
All right.
so much, Stephanie.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
There she goes. There she goes. She and her sister are very fierce dancers, may I just say. I think there should be a dance-off, if that's what it comes to on the debt ceiling.
A pants-off dance-off?
No, just a dance-off.
Oh, okay.
Sanchez sisters against whoever. Crazy teabaggers. Somebody. Hmm. I don't know. Whatever.
All right.
Whatever.
All right. You know I believe children are the future?
Yes, I've heard that.
I had a miserable Valentine's Day, as you know. Here's what I did. I deep conditioned my hair. That's what I did. I started drinking a little bit early, and...
Yeah, I know. Mm. I came over to your house at, what, 2:30?
Yes! Yes!
And you're already half in the bag.
Not half in the bag. Just getting warmed up.
You were happy. Remember that joke we were making yesterday? It's a quarter after one. I'm a little drunk.
Isn't it bad that I had, there were two cute stories about friends' kids that I thought, realized that their lives are going to end in romantic disaster as well. And it made me feel better. It perked me up. First of all, my friend's grandson, who is 7,
mm-hmm.
got a Valentine from every girl in his class.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Did you give any?" And he said, "No." And she said, "Why?" And he looks at her and he goes, "Grandma, I know what girls want." And I'm thinking, there's a bunch of future Fox wine-drinking women that he will undoubtedly...
When I was in grade school, we were required to give Valentines to everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds like socialism to me.
Oh, well, it probably was. It was the 70s.
And then my other friend, I'm on the phone with her discussing my pathetic life, and then her 8-year-old has the audacity to interrupt us, and he was in tears because he had forgotten that it was Valentine's Day, and he had the whole Valentine thing planned for some girl and had forgotten to do it, so he was a mess. And I'm like, oh, welcome welcome to the parade. Life is a bitch, and it starts in the 3rd grade. All right.
You didn't have to give Valentine's to everybody?
It was Catholic school. I don't remember. We were forced to do everything.
Oh, you were probably forced to pray to St. Valentine or something.
No, we were not. I don't think we had forced Valentine giving. I'm
really?
Curious if that's the rule now. Maybe some people can call us and tell us. I don't know what the rule is.
Since the advent of Sesame Street, where sharing and all of that.
No,
was...
we were not forced to. No,
really?
it was just one long Janicean song where you were chosen last for dodgeball and not gotten any Valentines and didn't get asked out. And it's pretty much stayed the same.
I was chosen last for every single sports
Me too.
Thing ever.
I had a unibrow.
I was
fat. Like,
oh,
who has to take the Armenian dude? Whatever. All right. It's not often I tell delightful stories about children, is it?
No, it's not.
Hmm. 18 minutes after the hour, we will be right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
See? We're having a nice time.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I forgot to tell you the most pathetic thing.
What?
About my Valentine's Day.
What?
Could you take your organ out for me, please?
Oh, boy.
It's just kind of funny that it was Valentine's Day. My phone rings. My big 1940s jangling telephone. That's where I wait for my gentleman callers. Next to my glass figurines.
Yes.
I did the second blood test. They do 2 to see if it's, you know, the change.
Your ovaries are dead. Wow.
Now you can finally do the eggs.
Well, I can't do the eggs because you don't have eggs anymore.
No. Dead eggs walking, it looks like.
Well, at least you can have sex with abandon now.
Just in time for my Valentine's Day sex from Bobby Kennedy, who, oh, by the way, is coming to town to do a reparative therapy on me soon. So that was a happy thing.
He's separated, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
He's single.
Yes.
So you can have wild sex with abandon
sure.
with him.
Sure.
And not have to worry about a little Kennedy.
There Oh, boy, am I pathetic. All right, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. And now I have to talk to my right-wing love muffin in Texas. Hi, Billy.
Hi, guys.
Listen, good morning.
Good morning. Happy post-Valentine's.
Thank you. Thank you. Listen, thank God it's over. All of it.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay. Loretta Sanchez said that the conservatives, Republicans, don't want anybody to be taxed or don't want any taxes. And that's not true. I think y'all know that's not true.
I don't know. They've been against every, I mean, obviously, this was just, the president just was just going to let the tax cuts expire like they were supposed to, that, you know, under George Bush. So this wasn't even a tax increase. It was letting these tax breaks expire, and they were against
that. I agree, but that's not what she said. She said that the Republicans don't want any.
Well, she might have been engaging in a little hyperbole, as some politicians are wont to do.
Well, and they need to be more accurate.
Okay.
You know, I think conservatives come down along the lines that the progressive tax system is immoral the way it stands. It's divisive.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfair. It's not getting the job done.
For instance, Billy, I'm having Ron Reagan on later in the show, which you will enjoy. He has a new book out about his dad. And you realize that Reagan increased taxes 11 times, right? And the taxes were much higher under Ronald Reagan than they are now.
I'll take your word for that.
Okay,
yes, sure.
Thank you. Thank you. I think you've learned that that's best. All right, I love you. Goodbye. Okay.
Aw, you didn't ask him about his pro flowers.
No, I didn't. He's a little sweet on me ever since I gave him a pro flower certificate.
All you got to do is bribe a right winger, and they'll come along with you.
George, and it seems it's like they like entitlements. It's like they like socialistic giveaways.
They like free stuff.
George in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
Good.
My condolences on your ovaries.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well,
and,
pretty much all the vital signs are pretty much flatlined.
Yeah. But my point is, I can't believe I tuned into Sanchez's interview, and I thought I was listening to a Republican, because
she's a blue dog. I mean, you know.
But here's it's how the debate has gone rightward, because now we have Democrats talking about cutting, not heating people in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And we've already given tax breaks to the wealthy, and we've already given Wall Street their money, and now there's nothing left for the rest of us. And we're asking the middle class and the poor.
Right, and George, I get it. I get that, now we have a Republican majority, so the president's doing his usual, like trying to reach out, like, okay, I'll do this if you do that. And but you're right. You kind of go, really? Do we have to cut heating oil to the poor in the winter? Really? Like,
And
they're not going to give an inch on tax cuts for the rich, right?
It doesn't win Obama a thing, and it's wasting everybody's time. You know, we've got 2 years to put up with this, and I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Just like Stephanie's ovaries.
Stop it.
Well,
stop it.
The ovaries didn't make it. To a second Obama term.
I just wonder, can they do it? Where's my good, the bad, and the ugly? I wonder if they can do it. Oh, there it is. I wonder if you actually saw pictures in there, just what it looks like. I bet you there are tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
Barroom doors.
Flapping saloon doors. Yeah. A lonely little...
dusty little... Yeah. A dusty little one-horse town.
Yeah. And one whore town. You know, that one, that one old whore just, looking for a job. Nobody's coming.
That's me. Okay. We got a big show coming up, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately for me.
Yes.
Representative Barbara Lee, Charlie Pierce, Ron Reagan. We got a big, big show. Don't go away. 29 minutes after the hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
How scary and confusing and sad all at once.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. Representative Barbara Lee of the... Oh, by the way, she's doing something for the 99ers. Rock on, my sister. She's got a bill up to help the 99ers.
Yes.
We've got Charlie Pierce, our Tuesday pal, and Ron Reagan.
The 99ers are the people that have been on unemployment for 99 weeks and are losing their their benefits.
I know that. Oh, I see. You were assuming that other people didn't know that.
Well, yes. I'm looking out for people, not for you.
Okay. All right. So anyway, lots more to, pardon me, get to.
And
because
Charlie Pierce is next hour, and then Ron Reagan is in hour three.
I know. It's a dream come true.
I know.
Republicans, of course, mocking the president's budget for waving feebly at a at the deficit as if to show how it should be done. They're ready to start muscling their own package of deep cuts in domestic spending through the House, which has been described by some experts, Chris, as blindly wielding a meat axe.
Yes, I've heard that.
Eager to please the teabaggers, Republicans are championing $61 billion in cuts to hundreds of programs for the remaining 7 months for this fiscal year. AmeriCorps, bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Corporation for Public Broadcasting, completely erased. Deep cuts would be carved from programs for, of course, feeding, you know, poor women, children, whatever. That stuff. Training, you know, the fat.
Right.
Trimming and training people for jobs. Why would you need that now? And cleaning up the Finger Lakes. Near Mama's hometown of Lackport, New York, up the transit from Cheektowaga and Lackawanna and Tanawanda.
Although you are closer to the Great Lakes than the Finger Lakes.
Yes, but this is for cleaning up the Great Lakes, which is,
yeah.
So anyway, it's the president.
The only way we can make these investments in our future is if our government starts living within its means. If we start taking responsibility for our deficits.
Okay. Oh, Katie in Washington State with a Valentine's Day update on what the state of Valentine giving in school. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're a teacher?
Yeah, I teach second grade up here.
Okay. So we were wondering if you had that socialistic forced Valentine giving program.
Yeah, we definitely do. All the kids, when they bring Valentine's, have to bring, you know, Valentine's for everybody. And I work in a pretty high poverty school. We have about 19 languages, and, you know, not a lot of kids can even bring Valentine's. So a lot of times we just, you know, make them in class. But one of the Valentine's that went home, though, was from one of our little Russian kids, and he typed it on the computer and took a lot of time. But I don't think he realized it said to everybody in the heart, "I want you inside me." And I thought it mixed up there. So,
oh, dear.
So yeah, that whole English as a second language thing. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So, and the teacher didn't notice that till it had gone home. But anyways, we definitely give all the Valentine's to all the kiddos. So.
See, Katie, I think the way I grew up, just the kind of every man for himself, it prepares you for the vast future disappointment that you're going to experience romantically. I think this forced Valentine, it doesn't work that way when you grow up.
I know, you expect something then every Valentine's
Day. It's like romantic T-ball forcing everyone to give everyone a Valentine's Day.
That's what it is.
It's like giving everybody a trophy.
That's totally
right.
What it is.
I'm old and crotchety now. Frank and Frank.
How many Valentines did you get when you were a kid?
Probably none. I don't remember.
Oh.
Frank. No, I'm sure I got a couple. Frank in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Frank.
You know, I'm really starting to despise progressive radio callers who think President Obama can save the nation by himself without huge numbers of people behind him. You know, this is a team sport we're involved in here. You know, not for nothing, but what I see is Obama-Biden policy allowing enough rope for the Republican monkeys to hang themselves. Besides, what have the callers done to help beyond whining and complaining on the radio? You know, other than the possibility that Republican chamber of commerce operatives are setting up phone calls to progressive talk radio, I don't understand the problem.
You got the memo from Oprah, didn't you? You're like,
You know, what's the value of bad-mouthing Obama Biden? I don't understand.
Yeah. No, I was saying, it really is. I was telling you, I got this whole, email chain with my Republican brother. It's just relentlessly negative about the president. It just does not matter what he says, what he does. I mean, literally took, the president's prayer breakfast speech. Oh, he's slick, and I don't believe anything he says. It's just like, it was a prayer breakfast speech. It just is.
You know what, though? Your brother probably said the same thing about you during the Bush administration.
Well, I was right during the Bush administration.
Okay.
God's sakes. No, I mean, yes, the illegal war based on lies. Yes, a few people like me had a few thoughts about that. But I'm just talking about, you know, whatever. Even just, I mean, the most I benign things the president says or does. Look at Michelle Obama. Oh, she wants us to eat healthy. You know, we don't have a massive obesity and health care dilemma in this country.
And nobody's forcing you to eat healthy.
No, of
She's just
not.
Saying, hey, yeah. it might be a good idea if you yeah. had a veggie here and there.
I'm just saying the tone is a little, you know, we played that audio from somebody calling a right-wing radio show. Oh, she's fat. She shouldn't talk. You know, it's
that was
like,
a caller to Mark Levin show.
Yeah, with some fat ass joke. It's like, what? How did we get here about the First Lady of the United States who's trying to, you know?
And might I say, she has a healthy booty.
She's beautiful.
She's delightful.
Oh, all right, the president on the
even budget. As we cut waste and inefficiency, this budget freeze will require some tough choices.
Eric Cantor, of course, the first to tear into the president's budget, saying it fails to address the grave fiscal situation facing our country. Yeah, the poor don't suffer enough under
right.
this for them, for God's sakes. He also took the opportunity to tout the Republicans' budget plan, which is expected, of course, to include much deeper cuts.
Huh.
Jacob Lew, who is the White House budget director.
The budget that we sent to Congress today is a responsible plan that shows that we can live within our means and we can also invest in the future. It cuts spending and, crucially, it cuts the deficit.
Yeah, Obama's touchstone phrase, as you know, from the State of the Union has been win the future, which Sarah Palin turned into a hilarious quip. Oh, it sure is. WTF. It's a WTF. A lot of WTF moments in that speech there. You betcha. Sputnik. Meant to define a spending plan focused on economic development and job creation, it also scales back spending in other areas to help pay down the federal deficit. Calls for a 5-year freeze on discretionary spending not related to national security. That would reduce by $400 billion. He slated to propose a 2-year plan to continue paying unemployment benefits for cash-strapped states as the economic downturn continues. Obama also announced he wants to use $18 billion in federal funds to connect 98% of the nation on the Internet on smartphones and tablet computers in 5 years. That and high-speed rail seem like two of the smartest investments I've heard, don't you think?
Absolutely.
$53 billion, as I just said, in the high-speed rail that we just talked to Congresswoman Sanchez about. With all that spending and borrowing, aide said this week, Obama also wants to cut several $1 billion from the government's energy assistance fund for the poor, which I think is a bad idea. But it's just that's the problem. Is the Republicans just they're going to continue their hell no you can't. They don't. They're not going to go, oh, okay, well, in addition, in exchange for hurting poor people, which we love.
Hell no, you can't!
No. We're not going to have the rich pay their fair share to counteract that. So I don't know. I mean, it's anybody's guess how this is going to play out, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you
this
know,
could turn into Egypt. Who knows?
Right. And like
Anderson Cooper could get punched in the head here. I don't know what's going to happen with this budget battle, Chris, but it's going to be ugly.
And like Congresswoman
Sanchez... like, what? What do I have to do with this? Why are you punching me?
And like Congresswoman Sanchez said, you know, the president can only suggest the budget. It's
right.
Congress that actually passes
yes.
the budget, and they're the ones who take things out and put things in, makes other suggestions.
All right. Tommy in Palm Springs, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Tom.
Chris, you're such a right-wing tool. You did it for them again.
What?
Whenever you said, I bet that your brother said the same thing about you. And Stephanie, you were right.
Thank
because you.
You
know what? Bush undermined this country every turn.
I was right, too.
You weren't right.
I was
you
right.
No, what he's saying is that's the right wing's perception.
They
is
should
that
not be saying, they should not be spewing this vitriol about this president because he is trying to do things that will help this country, and he can't do anything right in their eyes.
Well, Tommy, and we were criticizing his policies.
Wait a minute, Stephanie.
Oh, pardon
Bush me. Couldn't do anything. I'm sorry. Bush couldn't do anything right in our eyes because Bush wasn't doing anything right.
Yeah. Well, let's start with claiming that he was illegitimately president. Well, in fact, he wasn't elected. He was appointed by the Supreme Court.
Even that step aside, once he got in, he didn't do anything for this country.
Yeah.
He did everything against this country.
Yeah.
The tax breaks. I mean, immediately he got into a surplus, came into a surplus, and the first thing he does is decide that he needs to give a tax break enormously
yeah.
in favor of
Tommy, there's a great piece. There's a great piece I want. Settle down, Skippy.
Please
hey.
Wait for a second.
Tommy,
whoa,
hang on, hang on.
Tommy,
I want
show
you to read. There's a great piece I want you to read by Lawrence Korb, who we've had on the show, who worked under Reagan. Since I'm having Ron Reagan on the show later today, he talks about Reagan's progressive foreign policy. He compares Reagan to Bush on a number of levels that you know.
Reagan raised taxes 11 times, you said? Yes, and almost every single one of them was on us, the middle class.
That's right.
You know, I mean, our credit cards, he went after all the folks with the Social Security and unemployment, and he raised he raised taxes 11 times, but every time against us, and they do it every single time. So,
yep. All right, so, Tommy. Are you spent yet?
No, Tommy. I said nothing about Bush. I said nothing about Reagan. I said nothing about Democrats. Let me finish, please. Let me finish.
You just brought him to the same level, and you said it was equating. Our side with their side.
Now,
and
Tommy,
Stephanie is
all
right.
I said,
we are right.
Tommy, all I said. I just made a comment about her brother. That's the only thing I did.
All right. Thank you, Tommy.
Okay.
All right, Tommy. Okay. All right. Okay.
God. Because your brother did say the same things.
It's like my mom sort of implied that it's my fault I got on Glenn Beck's crazy death threat list. Because maybe I've gotten too serious instead of funny. And I'm like, no, that's the point, is I made a joke. And the right wing has gotten so crazy and humorless that they, you know what I mean? It's just, it's like, okay. All right, 46 minutes after the hour. Wow, that was like a little family argument, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller
Show. With Representative Barbara Lee?
Yes, next.
And we'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. We are joined by one of our very favorites, Representative Barbara Lee of the great state of California. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
I'm glad to be with you, too. You know what? You were the only one that was right about Afghanistan, and we could be done with this whole deficit by now.
telling you, and let me tell you, I'm offering my amendment again in form of a bill this week calling for no more funding for Afghanistan. The only money we should provide for the Pentagon is to protect our troops and contractors and to bring them home.
Isn't that we're going to get to your bill about the 99ers, but isn't that just a shame when you sit and think about it, when you go Iraq, Afghanistan, tax cuts for the rich? I mean, we wouldn't have to have any of these horrible, painful cuts and things that, we shouldn't have to.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And let me tell you, talking about cutting discretionary funding back to 2008 levels versus not cutting defense funding back to 2008 doesn't make any sense. We should be cutting defense at least equal to what we're doing for discretionary funding. And so I, for one, think that the priorities are totally misplaced.
Well, thank you. There's a story today that the House Speaker, Boehner, of course, has the Pentagon is a plane they don't even want is being made in his district. That's not being cut, apparently.
No, that's not being cut. There are a lot
of,
and that's the point. I mean, we've identified cuts that minimally $52 billion that could be cut. Has nothing to do with not supporting our troops. Our troops deserve the housing and all of the health care and everything that they need. But their missile systems, fighter jets, and other hardware that really are being spent to primarily fuel the military-industrial complex, and secondly, to create systems for a Cold War era that doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you're one of two congresspeople who are introducing a bill to extend benefits to the 99ers, people who, of course, who have exhausted their 99 weeks of unemployment. And your spokesman said, we think Congress should be focusing on helping working class people and the folks who've really been hurt by the economy. I mean, that seems like, you know, job one, frankly.
That's what we should be doing. We should be creating jobs, and we should be creating a safety net and really some survival efforts for those who have hit the wall on unemployment compensation until we can provide for the required jobs to employ people.
You know, there was
That's why we're doing the extension for 14 weeks. We're trying to get this through, at least.
Yeah. You know, there was a piece in the LA Times you probably saw, but it says, you know, wait, you say the country's out of jobs for 11 straight months. Shouldn't these 99ers stop whining and get jobs? And, you know, they point out some good statistics. There's still 4.7 unemployed workers for every job opening. You know, experts said we've definitely seen improvement, but we're still in a huge crisis in the labor market. That crisis has been going on for so long, there's a significant number of people exhausting those 99 weeks. So, you know, I think that's important to understand. It's not like these people want to remain out of work.
These people want a job. And, you know, you hear so often, oh, these people are lazy. They're so accustomed to living on unemployment until they don't really want to look. Well, the Economic Policy Institute and others, just as you have said that for every job opening, there are 4.7 people who are unemployed. People want to work. There's no doubt in my mind about that, and that's why this bill is so important. Let me tell you, we have 60-some co-sponsors for the bill, and you know the name of the game here in Washington, D.C., is building co-sponsorship support. So I hope that the listeners this morning will urge their members of Congress to sign on to my bill, which is called the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Expansion Act, H.R. 589.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you point out again, you know, what it seems like we have to say every time that this happens, it's some of the most efficient stimulus spending you can do on unemployment insurance, right? You're putting money right into the hands of people that are going to spend it.
People have to pay their bills, their mortgage, their rent. They have to buy food for their family, and they spend this money. Wealthy people don't spend money.
Yeah.
You know, they invest money. They save money. People who are living on the edge and who really have to, you know, make ends meet, they spend money, and this is how you bring the economy back, consumer spending, whether you like it or not, in terms of, and there is a lot of debate on consumer spending and why that should be necessary for economic recovery, but that's the fact. And so, yes, people need this unemployment compensation to survive this economic downturn, and they will spend this money to help an economic recovery take place.
Congresswoman Lee, what is your first take on the budget and this whole battle that is going to unfold now?
Well, the Republican budget, I think, is outrageous. There's no way. You can just, for instance, in terms of the continuing resolution, they're trying to enact for the first time a huge spending cuts that would be about $60.8 billion. Their overall budget is a job-killing budget. It's not going to create jobs. It's going to actually create more job loss. And so I hope that the public understands that they are playing a shell game, and they're playing around with policies that are really going to dig us deeper into the hole. The president's budget is a heck of a lot better. He ends the tax cuts for the very wealthy. You know, I'm not pleased with many of the cuts that are coming from the White House, and of course we're going to work to try to help restore some of those cuts. For example, low-income heating, the LIHEAP program is being cut, community development block grants. There are other initiatives that I don't especially like in the president's budget.
Yep.
But, again, it's a heck of a lot better than the Republican budget. And, in fact, we have to really look at a budget, and the president's budget does that in terms of which budget is going to create jobs.
And God bless him for bringing back the having the rich pay their fair share. But, I mean the sad reality is now with a bigger Republican majority, there's less chance that's going to happen, right?
Well, we have a Senate and we have the president, and so hopefully they'll hold the line on this. The very wealthy got a huge tax break in December, which I did not support. We couldn't even, again, we tried to do the 99er extension in December.
Yeah.
Couldn't get that done.
Well, I mean, so, but now the Republicans are going to need to explain to the American people why rich people continue to deserve, you know, these enormous tax breaks when, you know, they're asking for the draconian cuts that they're asking for everywhere else, right?
Yeah, and I hope people understand that I don't think that's what they voted for in November, and I hope they're beginning to see the light in terms of what they did get out of this past election. And
I don't know if I'd call it the light, but yes, maybe they're seeing the dark finally they have plunged us into. Representative Barbara Lee of the great state of California, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. There she goes, Representative Barbara Lee.
Love her lots.
Love her. It's kind of their new budget is, what's that, the Spider-Man musical called? Something to
Turn
about
off
the dark.
The dark or
yes,
something.
Yes, that's like the new Republican budget. It's a disaster of Spider-Manian proportions.
And almost as expensive.
That's what you voted for. All right, 58 minutes after the hour. Charlie Pierce joins us next hour and much more as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
This hour brought to you by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting, the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, type in the promo code Stephanie. Promo code is Stephanie. Okay, StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LeBoy, voice deity Jim Ward, me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, like Carolyn did.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of her sliding Alan Grace and some tongue on the Progressive Cruise.
Yes.
Which you rock on, my sister. Steph had requested David Bender to plant one on Alan Grayson for her. I volunteered since David Wooden. This is for you, Steph. Oh, Carolyn from Cape Coral, you slut. Look at her, slut.
Slut. She's a slut. Look at her, slut.
Mm. She might as well, since, you know, my dream of having Alan Grayson's children died yesterday on Valentine's Day.
As well as...
But I got the call from the gyno. The second blood test. Yeah. Whee! Somebody want to do a Photoshop fun of what it looks like down there? Barroom doors. Dusty, dusty tumbleweeds.
Your uterus is a rocky place where no seed could find purchase.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much.
No problem.
All right, we've got Charlie Pierce and Ron Reagan all coming up on the big show. Let's go to Adam in Seattle on the budget. Hey, Adam.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, sir.
Well, you know, I think that Obama might be playing a card here with the budget, because now that the Republicans are in charge of the House, they're going to be licking their chops saying, oh, look at this, more cuts to the poor. And they're going to have to go back home to their constituents and say, yes, we cut your heating oil costs and we cut your WIC program. And this might just be how we take the House back.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, I mean, Nancy Pelosi said yesterday that she warned college students, police officers, children are going to be victimized. She said House Republicans are going too far, sacrificing Americans' health, safety, and future in order to protect these special interests. By the way, so most Republicans also shied away from, you know, anything in Social Security, Medicare, yada, yada, anything. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't stopped them for criticizing Obama's failure to do so. They don't have anything
right
about that either, because they don't have the political cojones. But they, yeah. The let's see. Paul Ryan said the president punted on the budget. He punted on the deficit.
Yes.
Okay. Melody Barnes, White House domestic policy advisor.
The president is responding to the big challenges that face the nation. At the same time, we've got to focus on investments. Focus on the kind of spending that brings us big returns.
But the Republicans, as usual, investments are French and gay.
Gay,
essentially.
Yes.
Socialist and French and gay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to Max in L.A. on the budget. Hi, Max.
Hi, Stephanie. You know, the problem with that last gentleman's rationale that Obama's playing a card on this is that he's the one who proposed cutting the home heating oil. And what makes me angry is I expect that out of Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
I expect...
No, I mean, I've said it all morning, Max.
I know you have. And, you know, the president, I support the president. I do. But, you know, he has to start standing up for the poor and saying, you know what, instead of cutting $3 billion out of home heating oil, the military can get along in the Middle East with $104 billion instead of
$107. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep.
And our party, I mean, I like the president, but we have to stop looking at this as a Barack Obama fan club. It's not about him.
Yeah.
It's about doing what's right for people. And this makes me so angry.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, unfortunately, we're facing a new political reality with this, you know, particularly the House. I mean, it's, you know, this is why I think what the president's doing, I assume, Max, is, you know, you're starting to make the case to the American people that, look, in 2 years when these tax cuts again for the rich expire, I mean, you cannot have a discussion about the deficit without that being on the table.
No, you can't, but I think that the president would be, and the Democratic Party would be a lot more productive in terms of getting back our majorities if we stood up and said to people, we are fighting for your home heating oil. The Republicans want us to cut more. We're not going to hurt you this way. We are going to take money out of the Middle East, and we're going to adjust the tax breaks, and we're going to do all of this.
Yeah, you know what? You know what, Max? If John Boehner, if the Boner would just give up the plane the Pentagon doesn't want that's going to be made in Ohio, the poor could be warm this winter. How about that?
I agree. He definitely should, but we need to stop going into this and saying, let's cut.
Yeah.
Stand up for the people who need this heating oil.
All right, I hear you, honey. Yeah, that is, I don't know if you heard that.
Right.
Despite earmark ban, Boehner brings home a pork barrel for defense project that the Pentagon doesn't want. He likes to tout his opposition to earmarks, you know. He's very anti-porky.
That makes so much sense.
Boehner and House Republicans appear to have included an earmark in all but name for the new speaker's district in a newly released House Appropriations Continuing Resolution. It includes massive cuts to programs like Head Start, of course, and others. But one thing it doesn't cut is $450 million stashed away for the construction of the Joint Strike Fighter engine the Pentagon doesn't even want. The big portion of the funds will go to Cincinnati, where Boehner grew up, and Dayton. Is that where he grew up, where the tavern was, Jim? I guess that's where the tavern was.
There's a tavern in Dayton.
And Dayton, the largest city in his congressional district, experts concluded the money looks, feels, and smells very much like an earmark. Smells a little porky. Huh, interesting.
Smells like bacon.
Last winter, Boehner openly criticized the Obama administration's exemption of defense spending from its discretionary spending freeze, saying there's got to be wasteful spending there, unnecessary spending in there. Not the plane in my district, not that one. Hell no, you can't talk about that one. Yet he has been silent on defense spending.
Hell no, you can't!
Since he became Speaker of the House, no word. No word at all on the defense spending thing. I guess he doesn't want me to bring up that, you know.
No, not at all.
No.
Hell no, you can't!
Sorry. That was rude. That was rude of me.
Totally.
Somewhere a poor person just froze so that the Pentagon could have a plane they don't want. But you know where it is, Jim? It's in the town where he grew up, where he worked in.
A tavern.
Yes.
You can't. I want my jet engine. Screw the poor people. Go get a job at a tavern, you poor bastard.
Fred in New Hampshire. Hello, Fred.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
I got a novel idea.
Yes.
Why don't we save $500 billion by cutting the military budget? You know, the whole idea that we have to maintain, and our brainwash, that we have to maintain this military empire, this imperialism that we have globally is insane.
Yeah.
There's so much waste in the military. We could live in a utopia if we cut 500. And you know what? We could. That would still leave us $300
billion. Yeah, Fred, how about if we have enough to blow the world up over, you know, like maybe 17 times rather than 27? Would that be enough?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think so. And the other thing is, this is what happens when you have people just elected. Any bozo can get elected. You go for a job, you have to have a resume, you have to qualify. But in this country, any idiot can run for president. As an example, George Bush, who I think was the dumbest ass ever and should have been horsewhipped in public along with Boehner.
I'd horsewhip you if I had a horse.
A lot of the new candidates.
Just call me Angry Fred.
All right. Hello, goodbye, Angry Fred. Well, I hate to say it. A lot of the present Republican candidates makes George Bush look kind of like Einstein. Hate to say it.
Yeah, that's true.
Sputnik. Also, I can see from my house.
Are you saying something good about George W. Bush?
Sort of. Ew.
Damning with faint praise.
I just think
That guy from last hour is going to get on you.
Oh, boy.
Was it Palm Springs
guy?
No,
didn't that leak out, Jim, that when Sarah Palin came on the scene, George Bush basically said, what a dummy.
What a dumbass.
She's never going to be president.
I bet she can't spell taxes.
David,
come from.
David in Detroit. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, go ahead.
It's first time, long time. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. I'll be gentle.
I wanted to say something. it seems like that in the Republicans' eyes, Obama can't do anything right. I mean, hell, he could cure cancer, and they would complain that he's killing the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, yeah. And we've heard the jokes, right, that he could walk on the Potomac, and they'd say he can't swim or ride or whatever. Brian in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how's it going? Here we go again with Democrats calling in and doubting Obama's sincerity toward the country, okay? Who in their right mind thinks that if they do put a bill out that says, hey, we're going to cut home heating, who in their right mind thinks that it's going to pass the Senate? Really? Is it going to pass the Democratic-led Senate? Okay? My thing is, I think Obama's putting this here to put the issue on the table, okay? If he didn't do it, nobody would talk about what's going on down there with the Republicans in the House, okay? These guys are, did you hear about the new thing where they're trying to pass a bill in South Dakota to kill abortion doctors? Okay, this is the level of crazy in the House. And if Obama didn't put something like, hey, killing heating oil for people, then it wouldn't get talked about in the news.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I forgot about that. Jim, here's one thing that Republicans have done. At least 13 states have introduced bills guarding against the non-existent threat of Sharia law.
Oh, thank God.
So that we've gotten taken care of.
Dodge that, Islamic bullet.
Speaking of, in other caliphate news,
That South Dakota law that he was talking about, South Dakota is moving to legalize killing abortion providers.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
Why are they legalizing murder?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, South Dakota's actually trying to do that.
Oklahoma voters by a 70-30 margin passed a ballot question that barred state courts from considering international or Islamic law when deciding cases, which they don't do now. The new law.
I'm
was
worried about the threat of Druid law becoming.
Yeah. What's, who's working on that? The new law,
South
which
Dakota,
was
apparently.
Widely
they like human sacrifices.
Was widely considered as unfairly targeting the Muslim community, you think? And blaming it for the non-existent threat of Sharia law, was blocked by an injunction issued just a few weeks later. The judge argued Sharia ban was unconstitutional because it violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, unfairly
and
singling out
common
Muslims.
Sense.
Well, yes. And just stupidity. And despite the injunction of the Oklahoma law, legislators in at least 13 states across the country have introduced or passed similar bills designed to protect us from Sharia law. And, you know, Jim Ward, as
and
always, brings up a... And, you know, actually, once again, Jim, probably something you say is a joke tomorrow. Mm. It'll be somewhere not on the Onion, but somebody will put forth a thing to protect us from Druid law.
Yeah.
And we'll just be like, that was a joke. Druids are coming. All right. Oh, by the way, speaking
you're
of
missing
which,
some stones?
I have to tell you
they
about
may be
the
in a hedge.
About this, hedge. The scariest thing yet to attack the country from FoxNation.com. I'll give you all that.
Oh,
and right,
yeah.
And right away. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 18 minutes after the hour, I will tell you about the greatest threats to America and right-wing world as we continue. 19 minutes after the
you're
hour.
You're welcome, Carmenite.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your information slut.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Four minutes after the hour. Well, Jim, once again, you are prescient. A joy in Santa Cruz, proving the need for protection from Druid law.
Mm.
Joy in Santa Cruz once made love to a Druid. Hello, Joy.
Hi there.
Hello.
Wow. Good morning. I just wanted to let you know that the Druid law would be one that is going to preserve the trees and bring
hemp. What? That's crazy,
crazy
liberal claptrap.
They are not Vikings. They are not Vikings.
It smells pagany.
Oh, we're very pagany.
All right. All right. Funny, he didn't look Druidish to you, did he? Hi! What did I do there?
You stole Mel Brooks.
All right, fine. All right, Joy, thank you for your confession. All right, this is what's on the... did this come from The Blaze?
Directly from The Blaze. We're actually trolling The Blaze for show prep now.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's where we go to find out the latest death threats against me.
That's true.
Glenn Beck's crazy fans. which my mom thinks apparently I'm responsible for because apparently I'm not funny anymore. I've gotten too serious.
If your mom had a computer, she'd go to the Blaze. That'd be her homepage.
Yes, because I engage in, I guess, angry left-wing rhetoric or something. Okay. When an eerie pale green image appeared in a recent Euronews report of the Egyptian unrest, some bloggers asked an interesting question. Is this the fourth horseman of the apocalypse? FoxNation.com. A news division of Fox picked up on the story and repeated the same question. After describing the figure as a flowing pale green image that resembles an erect rider atop a horse in a medieval-like barding, one blog points out the last of the biblical book of Revelation's four horsemen of the apocalypse, the pale rider, is said to be a bringer of death and the forerunner of hell on earth. Mediaite writes of FoxNation.com, the commenters on the page seem to pretty much agree on two things. One, the alleged apparition is nothing but a lens reflection. Number two,
a lens flare, yeah.
This is amazingly insane. I can't believe this is on a quote-unquote news website, as one commentator writes.
It's the fourth lens flare of the apocalypse.
Media Matters mocked those who wondered about the image's origin, even promised to issue a retraction if the figure did end up being the fourth horseman. They wrote, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no, Fox Nation, that is not the fourth horseman of the apocalypse. Note, if I'm wrong about this, I'm willing to issue a correction, but that'll be the least of my worries.
Yeah, at that point.
I think it's Murray the K, the fifth horseman.
Oh, boy. All right. Hey.
The best.
You know Pam Geller, I was on Joy Behar with her once.
She has a touch of the racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a touch of the right-wing crazy. She said CPAC was even compromised by Muslim Brotherhood activists.
Oh, God.
Now they're infiltrating the conservative political faction something?
Yes. And soon one of them will be Prime Minister of Israel.
What? Pamela Keller, the most vocal of the activists opposed to the so-called Ground Zero Mosque.
Yeah.
Said that the conservative political action conference she was speaking at had itself been corrupted and compromised by Muslim Brotherhood activists.
I would hate to be her. She's scared of her own shadow.
She said that many members of the board of the American Conservative Union had to go because they were allowing the event to be infiltrated by Muslim Brotherhood activists.
Being infiltrated by my shadow.
Her event was held to screen a preview of the film The Ground Zero Mosque, the second wave of the 9/11 attacks.
What?
She's trying to profit off of this now.
Oh, my
great.
God.
Okay, do I know where this comes from? Because somehow David Horowitz blasted Grover Norquist and Sual Khan for being involved in CPAC. There were also anti-Norquist and Khan flights. Is that somebody conservative is married to a Muslim? Is that where this all comes from? Something like completely
I don't...
Fat.
What?
Completely insane.
I don't
really even know where that comes from.
There's so many... warring factions of CPAC.
It's awesome. Oh, like, for instance, the latest conservative man fight is Ron Paul and Donald Trump.
Oh, yay.
It's huge. It's a huge fight. Huge.
Can I just say they're both right? Ron Paul is unelectable, and Donald Trump...
He's also unelectable.
He has a big yap. Yeah. Ron Paul said, I don't know whether he's earned the right, you know, to criticize someone for not winning an election when I don't know how many elections he's won so far himself, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't open up his big pie hole since he's never been elected to anything.
I think he and Rand Paul should have a hair off. See who's got the craziest hair.
Well.
But don't fight, boys. Don't fight. You're both unelectable. It's okay.
Rand Paul has a tribble. And what does Trump have? A woodchuck? No.
Some kind of woodland creature.
Yes.
I remember.
Yeah.
Hack in Los Angeles. Hey, normally I'm the hack here. Hello, Hack.
Hey. It is I, Hack, the official truck driving serious radio stepchild of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. I saw a great acronym for CPAC on my Facebook page.
What's that?
Clueless People Acting Crazy.
Which kind of people?
Clueless people acting crazy.
Oh,
that's
that is
yay.
Clever. Okay. All right, 29 minutes after the hour. Charlie Pierce next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm an aging icon who at this point is more tolerated than admired.
From the chopper. Already back in the chopper.
Yeah.
34 minutes after
the
hour.
I think that was Hosni Mubarak.
Wow. You know what? Maybe that that was the fourth horseman of the apocalypse, Jim, because this apparently is not an onion headline.
You didn't believe me when I told you.
I don't understand what's happened in our country. South Dakota moves to legalize killing abortion providers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Sure. A law under consideration in South Dakota would expand the definition of justifiable homicide to include killings that are intended to prevent harm to a fetus, a move that could make it legal to kill doctors who perform abortions.
Yep.
The Republican-backed legislation, House Bill 1171, has passed out of committee on a 9-3 party line vote and is expected to face a floor vote in the state's GOP-dominated House of Representatives. The bill, sponsored by Representative Phil Jensen, a committed foe of abortion rights, alters the state's legal definition of justifiable homicide by adding language stating that a homicide is permissible if committed by a person, quote, while resisting an attempt to harm that person's unborn child or the unborn child of that person's spouse, partner, parent, or child. If the bill passes, it could, in theory, allow a woman's father, mother, son, brother, or husband to kill anyone who tried to provide the woman an abortion,
right,
even if she wanted some.
So, caller,
I thought, no offense, callers, because many of you are very smart, but I thought, oh, come on, anyone with an opposable thumb can dial a phone. I was like, oh, did you hear about that bill? And so I was like, come on.
I don't count.
Stop it.
Because I confirmed it right after the caller said it. And
no, you don't count.
I don't count. No.
I thought you got duped again by some...
Blimey duped again.
I kid. All right. Yep, no, things are that bad out there,
yes,
just so you know, everybody. Okay.
So they could kill the mother, too, if they wanted.
Yeah, well, yes, that's a little loosey-goosey, legally speaking, that law, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, but by killing the mother, you would harm the fetus. So
yes,
that's a bit of a sticky wicket there.
In that case, the fetus would have it coming.
Oh, dear. Send your cards and letters to Jim.
You will remain in the penalty box for the rest of the show.
I'm just pointing out the illogic.
There's only one man now that understands, and that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, the funniest writer in the world, from the Boston Globe.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Wah, 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 wah. Hello, Charlie Pierce.
Why do you bring this stuff and lay it at my doorstep?
Sorry.
I used to have a beagle. He used to go into the woods. We used to have a beagle when I was growing up. You'd just go into the woods and, like, kill a rabbit and bring it and drop it on our front doorstep. Expect my mother to cook it, you know?
Yeah.
You tell me stories like this and I'm supposed to start here?
You know, Fred did that on the hike the other day. I was like, Fred, what do you have in your mouth? What do you have? You know, you have to do the forced jaw open. What is that? It was like some little rodent was dropped out.
But,
I was like, now!
Yeah, but Fred is like a woolly mammoth. Fred could bring like a puma home and drop it at your doorstep.
And I wouldn't know what was in his mouth till I opened it. Oh, it's a bear from the zoo.
That's okay. It's something he has in common with everyone who spoke at CPAC last weekend. You really don't know what's in his mouth till they open it.
What kind of crazy parade was that?
Well, gee, imagine
CPAC.
If we had a Democratic president who would get up in public and say, you know, the other party's really nuts. And, you know, there's really not much we can do about these people.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, it's getting bizarre out in the States. I mean, between that law in South Dakota and the guy in Wisconsin, it's getting really weird out there.
What? You know what? And again, as usual, I learned from callers yesterday what's happening in Wisconsin, but illuminate for all of us.
Well, no, I mean, he's seeking to take away the collective bargaining rights of the public service unions, but not only that, he's already reassured the citizens of the state of Wisconsin that he's willing to call out the National Guard to enforce, you know, whatever decisions it is he makes. Wonderful. It's 1875 again.
Wow. I mean, you know, in addition to this, you know, killed the high-speed rail, I think is he giving some stimulus money back or already has?
I think he probably is. And you know, I mean, I spent 5 years of my life in Wisconsin. So that's where I went to college, and I lived there for an extra year.
Yeah.
And the politics of that state that's a state where people pay attention.
Yeah.
And this one's going to get really, really messy.
Well, we have already, I think Jim offered that we would come and airlift Austin out of Texas, and we may have to stop and get Madison as well, because it's... it's getting bad
the
out there.
The city's put him in a bottle like the thing in Superman's Fortress of Solitude, that little city in the bottle.
Yes, exactly. A little Madison in a bottle. Exactly. So,
there's some symmetry there, by the way, having spent some time in Madison.
So, Charlie Pierce, the CPAC, I mean, what the hell's going on, though, when Dick Cheney gets called a war criminal? Everybody, Ron Paul wins the straw poll and then, you know, gets booed. I mean, it's just, I don't understand what's going on their side.
The Ron Paul people like to cause trouble, but let's face facts. They're all going to congeal behind, you know, whichever, you know, whichever, you know, off-the-wall Caucasian the Republican Party settles on it is what's going to be a very entertaining primary process, I think.
Well, Chris explained yesterday that it's only the people that bust the most people in that usually win the straw polls, which brings us back to Sean Hannity's, tirade about the buses during Katrina. Why didn't Ray Nakin send the buses for the Mitt Romney supporters?
Where are the buses?
It's a straw poll, and Mitt Romney, the straw polls now are divided between the Ron Paul people and whoever it is Mitt Romney can slip $20 to, basically.
What? I mean, seriously, can you get any kind of idea what is going to happen on that side?
No. I think they're probably going to end up settling for the most electable choice, much like they did the last time, but they're not going to do it without a messy fight this time.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot uglier than it was before, but the problem is that you start looking at who the respectable people are, and Tim Pawlenty wants to reinstate Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you think that, you know, perhaps the Joint Chiefs of Staff are like, you know, guzzling their ninth gallon of bourbon when they hear that? Oh, good, let's go through this again.
Yeah.
Send out another field order telling them not to ignore the other field order. It took us, you know, 50 years to call that.
Yeah, and then all the people have to pretend that they didn't hear the people say they were gay.
Right.
They have to go back and like pretend like, I don't remember what you said.
The new policy will be don't ask, don't tell, don't remember.
Yeah, don't remember what I said about that. Look at like Egypt. I mean, they could not figure that. You can almost feel them trying to figure out furiously, like, how can this be bad for the president? You know, and I mean, they literally, like, all we heard when George Bush was in freedom.
Bolton, though. John Bolton knew exactly why it was bad for the president. You know why it was bad for the president? Because he didn't bomb Iran.
Yes.
That's why.
Yes. Well, that's always John Bolton.
I like Josh Marshall's line, though, that John Bolton is running for warlord.
Yeah.
Everybody else is running for president, but John Bolton is running for his own little piece of land in the Hindu Kush.
But, I mean, talk about the fractions in the Republican Party, Charlie. I mean, look at, you know, the latest man fight, Bill Kristol and Glenn Beck,
that's one of the great fake issues of all time. First of all, Bill Kristol has said nuttier things with greater consequence than anything Glenn Beck ever said.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, you know, I have a short term memory that goes back to 2002. I remember Bill Kristol talking about the war in Iraq. Bill Kristol can shut up and sit down.
Yeah, I know. You've been wrong about everything.
For an awfully long time. Glenn Beck is nuts. Bill Kristol is just wrong.
Yeah, but on this particular point, I mean, you know, Glenn Beck is way, I mean, this whole caliphate, God bless him, I don't know. So,
I'm less concerned about the caliphate than I am about China taking over New Zealand, which also happens on his map.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we get some interesting cooking out of that, but other than that, I'm not exactly sure what anybody gains.
Well, I know, I can't believe that I'm quoting Bill Kristol to you, but he said, while conceding the final results of the revolution are still unknown, he said the early signs are good. The revolution was relatively nonviolent, true. The military is now keeping peace in the country. Promised to cede power to civilian authority once the elections were held in 6 months. In addition, they vowed to honor the peace treaty with Israel. I mean, it is so far so good, right?
Well, I think the most charming part of the entire revolution was the fact that when it was over, everybody showed up with brooms and cleaned up their mess.
I know, and painted. That was so cute.
Yeah.
It was like a giant mom and dad in Egypt, you know? And these were all their children and said, all right, now you've had your fun. Now pick up everything and go home.
Yeah.
So they went and they cleaned up, they swept up the square. I thought they were afraid.
Yeah, that was that they were the politest protesters ever. It was like a Huck Finn. They were like painting the fence. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, sorry we made a mess. So, but I mean, I just am saying it was hard not to be happy, right?
As I said, I think last week, I know nothing about this whole situation, and I hope it works out for the best. But so far it seems like these people were enormously dedicated to owning their own country.
Yeah.
And I wish that, you know, voters in Wisconsin felt the same way.
Yeah.
The budget, obviously, the big guy.
I hear you guys have been having fun with it this morning.
Oh, fun with budgets. What's more fun?
Well, I mean, I think those of us, you know, sitting here still looking out at the great piles of snow are very happy the president's cutting home heating aid off.
I know. Listen, I've said
Joe Kennedy Jr. is going to have to go to his pal Hugo Chavez and get more oil.
Well, at least you have that in Massachusetts. You know, the other states don't have that program.
Yeah, you know what else we have in Massachusetts? Romney Care.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Boy, is he having trouble explaining that one, by the way.
Oh, he's rewriting his book because of that.
That's, That's, well, not only that, he's rewriting his book about everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy, I mean, NBA, back in my sports writing days, I remember NBA coaches used to talk about airport players, with players who looked really good in the airport but couldn't play. Mitt Romney is an airport player. He looks great when you see him as a, you know, when you see him and you look at his resume and stuff. Then he opens his, yeah.
I know.
And Ann Coulter is right. He is unelectable.
Well, I think he may be unnominatable because he really doesn't have an answer on this whole, you know, he pushed this health care thing through a Democratic legislature because he thought it would help him in 2008.
Yeah, I wish.
Now he's stuck with it.
Now he's, I just want to know who's going to win the Mormon off between him and Huntsman.
Who's going to win what? The Mormon?
Who's going to win the Mormon off before we even get to the regular?
The battle for the sacred underwear. I think Huntsman's got the same problem with a lot of the base that Mitt Romney has, which is basically that, you know, a good portion of the base, especially in the South, think they're servants of Satan.
Yeah,
that's a tough one to overcome.
How is this budget battle going to play out, Charlie? Because they have some true crazies in their party. Like, you really think, you know, they really may vote to not raise the debt ceiling if they don't.
Yeah, that's possible. But I think what's going to happen is they're going to push the president to make cuts that anger his base and then blame him for them when he runs for re-election.
Mm-hmm. Look, this president cut, you know, heating oil to the indigent people in the Northeast. How can they possibly do that? Of course, we wanted to eliminate the whole notion, but we're not going to mention that.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. He's going to do all this stuff, and he's never going to get credit for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to give credit for putting the putting.
I mean, I'm sure that the Sunday morning talk lineup will love him for punching hippies again. But by the way, not a single Democrat last weekend on any of the panel shows.
Huh.
Not
yeah,
one Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, and as I was saying,
I guess the ambassador to Egypt is supposed to be a Democrat. I don't know.
But you know, I was saying though, I mean, you know, God bless them for putting the rich paying their taxes back in. You know, because you go, I mean, you got to have the discussion, how can you have any kind of credible discussion on the deficit without including that in the conversation?
Jim, move over in the penalty box, okay? I'll believe he's putting the taxes back in when they're back in.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think he's going to fight for that in an election year. I don't think he's got the faintest idea that he's going to fight for that in an election year. That's going to be the first compromise that goes out the window.
Well, we'll see.
Those tax increases are permanent.
You haven't been wrong of Bill Kristol proportions, but you have been wrong before on this show, Charlie Pierce.
When was I wrong on this show before?
I can't remember. listeners point it out all the time, but I love you anyway. You are hilarious. We'll see you next Tuesday.
See you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Yay. See you. Bye-bye. Okay. 46 minutes after the hour. Back with Right Wing World next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a combination of low self-esteem, low blood sugar, and mixing red wine with my dog's painkillers.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour, Ron Reagan coming up in just a few minutes on his new book about his dad.
Yep. And also next hour, the president's going to be giving a news conference. We'll be dipping in and out of that.
Dipping. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. All right, let's dive into the right-wing world, see what's doing, shall we, kids? Mm-hmm. Okay, Rush Limbaugh and Obamacare, my friend.
If I say, folks, if it all bombs out, if all these promises... Look, if the attempt is not even made to defund Obamacare, repeal it, or whatever, then we go Egypt on Obama the next election. That's what happened next. And by the way, Obama can't complain if we go Egypt on him because he said that's how democracy works. It's what he said on Friday.
Mm.
This is the way real democracy works. So he can't complain if it happens to him, and it will.
I see.
Right. So
that was a bit of a threat.
Wow. So, yeah, he's encouraging a Egyptian-type revolution. Over
health care.
Uh-huh.
Because
mm-hmm.
people don't want that.
Because that's exactly the same as what happened in Egypt. Oh, let's review his good friend Glenn Beck. He believes the protests in Egypt will lead to chaos, followed by violence, followed by one world Islamic government called a caliphate, and finally an end to the Western way of life, as we know it. So that's...
Pretty much every serious person on the right is calling BS on that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Both of them, yes.
Well,
that's because you're part of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh,
there
really?
Is no stated transition plan in place in Egypt.
And the most organized group is the Muslim Brotherhood being whitewashed by our media. They are not friendly to Israel. They are not friendly to America. And they are certainly not friendly to man's freedom.
Yes, I saw that live yesterday when I was watching.
Why?
Yes, inadvertently had it on the Fox. Well, you know why. Because on the weekend, on MSNBC, Doc Blocks, prison things. And so sometimes I have to turn to, you know. And there it was. The Muslim Brotherhood.
Sometimes they're female prisons.
Okay, Steve Ducey on...
what, Jim?
Suddenly
what?
You've gotten Jim Speaks his interest. Steve Ducey.
I was not aware of that.
Steve Ducey on the Fox and Friends.
President Obama later today will propose $1.1 trillion in cuts over 10 years. But even the head of Obama's deficit commission says the cuts aren't enough. So is the president's budget just a weak attempt to appear fiscally responsible while he continues to write checks that the government can't pay?
Some people say...
Well, that seemed fair and balanced. He's just saying what people are saying, Jim.
Sure.
And some say that they're saying about the thing.
Yeah, people want fewer cops and firemen. And so,
yes, yeah. Yes, okay. Stuart Varney and Tracy Burns on that Fox Business channel.
They want to raise it in the year 2050 to 68 years of age, social career retirement age.
Right. And it's ridiculous. Close it.
40 years.
Close it. You want to do something dramatic? Close it. You don't need it, Stuart. You don't need it.
Close it.
And my generation doesn't even need it. Close it.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Shut it down.
Shut down Social Security.
Hit the lights on your way out.
So all the money we've poured into it would be...
Party's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Close it. We don't need it?
Actually, it's...
Who's we, Kemosabe?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, Tracy Burns is rich.
Yeah.
She doesn't need it.
Okay.
The rest of us...
I don't need it, so screw everybody else. Just go and make $1 billion.
Does it.
I mean, even Ayn Rand allegedly took from Social Security.
Yes. Okay. Oh, boy, must we. Why must you give
but
me a double
like
helping?
To talk about it.
Glenn Beck on the radio.
This CPAC thing that we're looking into, our organizations and our groups need to make sure that we haven't been infiltrated by, you know, communist or Islamic radicals.
Huh? Is he serious?
Yes.
No, he's never serious. Well,
that's what Pamela Geller was warning about. Oh, because, what's his name, Grover Norquist is married to a Muslim woman.
And so therefore,
that's why CPAC was being infiltrated, you see, because, as part of the caliphate.
Because obviously she's a member of the Muslim Brotherhood,
yes,
you know, being a chick and all.
Right. So.
So she wants to drown Israel in a bathtub, apparently.
Yes. Because if there's one thing Islamists believe in, it's women's rights. So that's, you see, how.
That's their devious plot. Those burkas are hiding feminists.
Feminazis.
That's why they cover it up, so you can't see how feminist they are underneath there.
With their hairy legs.
Yeah. Mm.
What?
Hairy feminists. Okay.
I think the arguments may be a little illogical.
You think?
Getting that impression.
Well, let's finish with Charles Krauthammer. Show me on the Bripper.
People would be ashamed to go out there and defend a budget so cynical as to... It borders on the scandalous. I mean, this really is astonishing. This is a president who appoints a deficit reduction commission, ignores all its recommendations. The Democrat he appointed as the co-chair of it said the budget does nothing. It gets us nowhere near what we have to do to deal with the debt nightmare.
Yeah, it's...
Suddenly it's a debt nightmare now that Obama's in charge.
Yes.
Yes, now you need to swing a meat axe blindly at anything that resembles helping the poor women and children.
But
whatever.
Bush was in charge, it was a good thing, because he got rid of that nasty surplus.
It's a good thing you done, Bush.
It's good what you done,
All right,
Bush.
In caliphate news, because I'm in charge. The popular revolt that last week unseated Hosni Mubarak is creating ongoing political fallout across the Middle East and Iran. Demonstrators inspired by the events in Egypt today clashed with police. I wonder what John Bolton would say we should do.
Just take the top 10 floors and blow them up.
Top 10 floors of Iran?
The United States makes the UN work when it wants it to work.
Mm.
And that is exactly the way it should be, because the only question for the United States is what's in our national interest.
Okay, several other autocratic regimes in the region have been rocked by widespread, often youth-led protests demanding economic and political freedom. Algeria, Iran, Tunisia, it started, and in Yemen as well. So, yeah.
Damn fool kids
damn fool kids with their interwebbies.
Yeah, it's getting pretty serious over there in Iran.
Yeah.
People are being killed now in the streets. So
before John Bolton can kill them. So
yes,
that's got to be upsetting for him. All right, 58 minutes after the hour, Ron Reagan back is next with his new book, My Father at 100, a memoir, as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. Oh, thank you, Leah, in Cary, North Carolina. She has done a Photoshop bun of my barren ovaries. Like an old saloon in there.
Yeah. It's up on your Facebook
page, too.
It's
always nice to get that call on Valentine's Day from your gyno.
You're barren. Your womb is a rocky place where nobody's seed can find any purchase.
There wasn't a lot of chance of that happening anyway, but okay. All right. We have lots to get to. Our buddy, our pal, Ron Reagan joins us now. Ron, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stephanie.
I miss you since our last face-to-face,
in
Seattle.
Are you out of the cast yet?
I am out of... I think you carried me somewhere or pushed my wheelchair or something.
No, I did. That's true. I did. I pushed your wheelchair for a little bit. It was quite an honor.
Well, I have to tell you, I've seen you talking about your book, and it really, I have to say, seems like such a loving book about your dad. It is called My Father at 100, a memoir.
Yes, it is. Yes, I would say it's a loving sort of memoir. It's a curious sort of memoir. I was interested in going back into his deep past and figuring out just who is this guy that was my dad for all these years. You know, those of us who knew him very well were quite aware that he had a sort of central core that was not always easy to get to.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I mean, obviously, we all heard about this spat you had with your brother, which, trust me, I know from interfamily political spats.
Yeah, he was doing most of the spatting. I was just trying to kind of clean up the mess he left behind. But I guess I would send him a thank you note for increasing sales. In his enthusiasm to promote the book, though, he neglected to read it, which led to some misunderstanding.
Yes, that right away, I guess, can be a problem. You know, I saw you on one show, and I can't remember, but you were saying that there was something in particular you had said about your dad, and you said you meant it in a way like he was almost too good to be true, like in the sense that, personality-wise, you said he just didn't have a mean bone. He wouldn't gossip about people. I guess that's what you were trying to...
That's true. Yeah, well, I say in the book that those of us who knew him very well would agree that he was one of the strangest people we'd ever met, but not in a dark, creepy way,
right.
by any means. In fact, he was almost too good. In just a sort of personal sense. This isn't a book about politics,
right.
So we can argue about his politics, some other time.
Sure.
But as a character, he was like bizarrely guileless and had no cynicism in him, and really was almost weirdly good that way. He never gossiped as a guy. I mean, he's a kind of a big physical guy. I never heard him bluster at all. He was never one of these guys who came home and said, I could have kicked his ass if I, blah, blah, blah. Never, not once.
Right.
It was almost weird.
Well, it's an interesting take. I mean, obviously so much has been said and written about your dad, but, you know, someone that knew him not as an advisor or friend or a colleague, but, to actually have grown up with him, it describes him as a man who was warm yet remote, a man of almost legendary affability who had virtually no close friends besides his wife in later life, a man who reveled in public display yet remained intensely private.
Yeah.
Interesting dichotomy, huh?
Yes, well, he was definitely a man of paradox, and I think that the place to look for the beginnings of that paradoxical character, of course, were in his early life, and that's why I decided on the cusp of his 100th birthday to go looking way, way back, starting before his birth with his family's history, but then back to 1911, which, as it turns out, is really a long, long time ago. I mean, when you look at pictures from back then, I found pictures of his first hometown, Tampico, Illinois, around the time he was born. There are no cars on the streets. It's all horse-drawn carts and carriages on a dirt street. You know, this is the world that he was born into, and this is the world that shaped his character.
What, I mean, obviously when you went back through this whole, his childhood and past, I mean, what surprised you the most about his, formative years, would you say?
Well, he was a very lonely little boy, I think. We think of him now as being very confident and, sort of this big, robust fellow, but as a child, he was undersized, and his family moved around a lot, and so he was always the new kid in school. He was picked on by bullies a lot. He was chosen last for games in the playground, and he began spending a lot of time by himself, in his own head. He was very nearsighted, too, so, much of the world was kind of a smudgy blur until he was a young teenager. So he would kind of spend time up in attics of rented houses they had, or out in these fields, or by creeks and things, in the environs of his childhood, dreaming this dream of his own life to come, this dream of himself as a hero. He became fascinated by the West at a very early age because of some artifacts he'd found left behind in one of these attics that he would spend time in. And he began dreaming about being a hero in the West, out in the Wild West in this open landscape. He would see movies, too, as a kid, and then see, Tom Mix Westerns, and this idea planted in his head. But he was very much an internally directed little guy.
What would we be most surprised to learn about your dad? I mean, just as we just knew him as the president, I don't know what your favorite memories are or anything like that, but...
The extreme gentleness of his character, actually. I know that some of us on the left tend to think of him as this kind of cruel guy who is out to, kind of do in the poor and the underprivileged and all of that. Again, we can argue about policy all we want, but as a person, as a man, he was one of the most soft-hearted, sentimental, soft-touch kind of guys you'd ever want to meet. Hated interpersonal conflict, hated any kind of interpersonal strife at all.
What do you think he'd think of the Tea Party?
I think he would be, we can say that he's a low-tax, small-government kind of guy, so he might be sympathetic to some of those goals, but I think he would be very distressed by the kind of vitriol that he hears emerging from that corner of the political playing field.
Speaking of vitriol, you talked about your dad's Alzheimer's in the book and then got all this blowback from not just your brother but people on the right for something that seemed, I think, fairly obvious to a lot of people, that, clearly Alzheimer's is a progression that obviously started...
Yes, I think the mistake some people make is they hear Alzheimer's, the disease, and they think dementia, the symptoms. There's no, in one sentence in the entire book, I simply observe that given what we know now about Alzheimer's, as you said, it's a progression that takes decades before symptoms arise. And given that he was diagnosed a few years out of office, clearly the disease must have been present in him. That's not to say that he was suffering from dementia while he was in office. I do say that there were occasions during his term when I would worry about him sometimes. I would wonder, is everything all right? Is he, is he kind of healthy and 100% and all? But that, I don't attach the name Alzheimer's to those worries. I didn't at the time, and I can't now. It would be mere speculation. And we have to remember, this is a guy in his mid-70s by the time I started having these worries. He'd been shot and nearly killed by that time.
Yeah.
That'll take a little steam out of you.
So. Ron, let me ask you all the questions that I'm asked as the child of a famous Republican father who turned out left-wing. What happened to you? What happened to you? When did you develop your politics? And what? Further than that, I need to know how you deal with the interfamily, because I'm in the middle of one right now.
this interfamily thing with with Michael and all, I really don't deal with it all directly with him. Mike and I don't really speak much, so I just sort of ignore that and try and correct the record where I can. You know, as far as how I became a kind of lefty, I'm not really sure, but I don't think it's that uncommon for, yeah, I mean, look at you.
This
you
is
know,
the point I'm making yes, about the Eisenhowers and Goldwaters. I'm like, Mom, I'm not the only one.
No,
that
it's,
feels
well, it's
like...
true, we're not the only one, especially for kids, people like us who grew up in the 60s, 70s, you know, that sort of thing. You know, come on, this was pretty common.
Well, and we're kind of weirdly connected. I mean, you know, as you know, your dad gave the speech that, you know, is thought to have launched his career for my dad in Goldwater in 64. And
that's
so,
right.
You know, there's obviously a lot of through lines there. But this is what I've said, Ron, is, you know, we're not the only people saying this is not my dad in Goldwater's or even Reagan's party anymore. I mean,
I
feel like it's not even George Bush's party. Like, you know, this new breed of whatever this is, Tea Party or whatever, right?
Yeah, he would have gotten, my father, I'm sure, would have gotten off the bus when they started, you know, holding up the START treaty, the new START
treaty, God.
For instance. You know, he was all about getting rid of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And the thought that people would sort of game that, would you know, hold this up just to score some political points.
Yeah.
I mean, really, he would have wanted to reach out from the grave and pinch John Kyle's head off. You know, I mean...
Well, I mean, this is what we're saying. You can't even, as a Republican, even hint at comprehensive immigration reform, and your dad gave amnesty to millions.
Yeah, the Bracero program. Yeah, he also signed one of the most liberal abortion laws in the country when he was when he was governor of California, and raised taxes 7 out of 8 years he was president.
I know.
But, you know, those things get kind of, you know, lost.
Well, but he was about compromise, right, Ron? And that's the thing they're missing on in the Republican Party today.
To say if I can get 80% of what I want, that's a great thing, and I'll take it. You know.
I don't know if you saw Larry Korb's piece today, but he called, you know, your dad's foreign policy progressive, you know, by today's standards.
I think by the standards of let's go invade countries that, you know, pose no threat to us. Yeah, I would say I don't recall any major wars while he was president. Grenada doesn't really count,
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, he was horrified by the idea of putting young Americans, or anybody else for that matter, in harm's way for no really good reason.
Well,
you know?
I mean, think how he would have been called a cut and runner for making the decision, which I think was correct, that, you know, as Korb says, he did a cost-benefit analysis and realized the potential costs of continuing involvement. But, you know, so he obviously...
In Lebanon.
Yeah,
right.
Lebanon,
pulled
right.
The Marines out after the barracks was bombed. Yeah, it was, you know, I've got our young people in harm's way. They're in the middle of somebody else's civil war. That's clearly not where they ought to be.
Yeah.
Let's get them out of there before something else happens. This all goes back to him being a lifeguard. That was his persona throughout life, as I point out in the book. It was really lifeguard. And that's why he wanted to get rid of nuclear weapons. He used the phrase in debate with Walter Mondale, we have to save the world.
And in the era of new bipartisan civility, may I say your dad kind of a hottie in those original bathing suit photos.
Yes, yeah, I think you noticed that, didn't he? He was kind of a hunky fellow.
As are you, Ron. It's just a pleasure to talk to you again. And miss you. I miss you on the old progressive radio circuit. I hope I can see you again soon.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate it. I tune into you whenever I'm out driving around in my car at this time.
Fabulous. Well, listen. I need more of a commitment than that. I need at home, on the computer. I need everywhere.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Yeah, all right.
The book is My Father at 100, a memoir. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right.
Thanks for having
there
me.
He goes. Ron Reagan.
He's delightful.
Yeah.
He is delightful. Just in time for the Ronald Reagan Forever stamp that's been unveiled.
Mm-hmm.
this is just thing. Permanent Reagan administration?
Well, no, pretty much all stamps are forever stamps now.
I was just going to say, I don't think there's been nearly enough said about Reagan. It just days after what would have been the 40th president's 100th birthday, the stamp affixed with the new forever price denomination was unveiled during another ceremony at the Ronald Reagan. This is his third? Yeah, it's his third stamp. All right. 18 minutes after the hour. Much more to go as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, God. That feels weird and good all at once.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh. Stephanie Miller.
Justin Bieber, you're such a scam.
This isn't Justin Bieber.
This is Kitty.
Fat Joe featuring Nelly.
Stephanie Miller. Yeah.
Not Fat Nelly Joe. That's a different guy.
That's totally different guy.
Mm.
He's in West Hollywood.
All right. 23 minutes after the hour. Get up. Get it popping. Here we go. All right, President, at the press conference, we join it live.
Good headline on the first day. My goal is that a year from now or 2 years from now, people look back and say, you know what? We actually started making progress on this issue.
There was this
criticism people had right after the midterm election. If you had polled the press room and the conventional wisdom in Washington after the midterm, the assumption was there's no way we were going to end up getting a tax deal that got the majority of both Democrats and Republicans. It was impossible. Right? And we got it done. So this is not a matter of you go first or I go first.
I got this.
Yeah. This is a matter of everybody having a serious conversation about where we want to go and then ultimately getting in that boat at the same time so it doesn't tip over. And I think that can happen. Juliana Goldman. There you are.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your budget relies on revenue from tax increases to multinational corporations that ship jobs overseas and on increases on oil and gas industry. You've been calling on this for years. And if you couldn't get it through a Democratic Congress, why do you think you'll be able to get it through now? And also, doesn't it blunt your push for deficit-neutral corporate tax reform?
I continue to believe I'm right. So we're going to try again. I think what's different is everybody says now that they're really serious about the deficit. Well, if you're really serious about the deficit, not just spending, but you're serious about the deficit overall, then part of what you have to look at is unjustifiable spending through the tax code.
Yes.
Tax breaks that do not make us more competitive, do not create jobs here in the United States of America. And the two examples you cite, I think most economists would look at it and they'd say, these aren't contributing to our long-term economic growth. And if they're not, why are we letting some folks pay lower taxes than other folks who are creating jobs here in the United States
Thank you.
And are investing? Why are we not investing in the energy sources of the future,
Amen.
Just the ones in the past?
Amen.
Particularly if the energy sources of the past are highly profitable right now and don't need a tax break.
Hallelujah. Testify.
So I think what may have changed is if we are going to get serious about deficit reduction and debt reduction, then we've got to look at all the sources of deficit and debt.
See, he listens to the show before he does these.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I've been saying all morning.
Yeah, and just trying to pick and choose and getting 100% of our weight. The same is true, by the way, for Democrats. I mean,
he knows it's a wise investment in his future.
Exactly. Budget. It's as wise as high-speed rail.
Are hard for me to take. You've got cities around the country and states around the country that are having a tremendously difficult time trying to balance their own budgets.
Wisconsin.
Fallen revenue.
Texas.
They've got greater demands because
folks
have lost their jobs.
Yeah.
The housing market is still...
Places, ironically, run by Republicans.
In a lot of these places. And yet... Part of what this budget says is we're going to reduce community development block grants by 10%. That's not something I'd like to do, but and if it had come up a year ago or 2 years ago, I would have said no. Under these new circumstances, I'm saying yes to that. And so my expectation is that everybody is going to have to make those same sorts of compromises. Now, with respect to corporate tax reform, the whole concept of corporate tax reform is to simplify, eliminate loopholes,
yes,
treat everybody fairly.
Mm-hmm.
That is entirely consistent with saying, for example, that we shouldn't provide special treatment to the oil industry when
what?
They've been making huge profits
uh-huh.
and can afford to further invest in their
Socialism.
Companies without special tax breaks that are different from what somebody else gets.
Exactly.
Well,
Kenyanism.
What is absolutely
Kenyanism.
True is that
this is
it's going to be difficult to achieve serious corporate tax reform if the formula is lower our tax rates and let us keep all our special loopholes.
That came right from the Muslim Brotherhood handbook.
We're not going to get it done. I wouldn't sign such a bill, and I don't think the American people would sign such a bill. If you're a small business person out on Main Street and you're paying your taxes, and you find out that you've got some big company with billions of dollars and far-flung businesses all across the world, and they're paying a fraction of what you're paying in taxes, you know, you'd be pretty irritated. And so the whole idea of corporate tax reform is, yes, let's lower everybody's rates so American businesses are competitive with businesses all around the world.
And close the loopholes. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Don't you make me spill my wine.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. We're joined now by our good friend Craig Griffin of ITM Trading. Lots of talk about the economy in the press conference, the budget and all that. Good morning, Craig.
Morning, Steph. How are you?
I enjoyed having you and your lovely wife over to my house, I have to tell you, first of all.
Well, it was really nice of you to have us over, and it was very beautiful, and it was a really enjoyable morning as well. So thank you.
Well, because a lot of times people say, you know, do you really use the products that you talk about? I'm like, yes, I have beautiful Double Eagle gold coins brought to my house personally by Craig Griffin, which we can't promise everybody, right?
That's right.
But, you know, it's interesting. You and I had a conversation about, you know, people like Glenn Beck have given some gold, you know, sellers a bad name because he sort of weaves it into all these weird conspiracy theories, like presently with the, you know, Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood and caliphates and whatever. I buy gold because it's a good investment. Is that the wrong reason to buy gold?
Well, there's a perception out in the world that, you know, gold is the antithesis of the stock market and the economy. And the stock market, by the way, is the economy. But if we were to go back to October 9th of 2002, for instance, the stock market had been in a downward spiral since the beginning of 2000. And on October 9th of 2002, the Dow closed at 7286.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was the bottom for that move. And from there, the Dow began to climb, and it climbed all the way to 14,164 by the time we got to October 9th of 2007, exactly 5 years to the date, which is somewhat interesting. So the Dow climbed from 7,286 to 14,164, which was an increase of 94.4%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, during that same period of time, for instance, on October 9th, 2002, gold was $319.70. And by the time we got to March 17th, gold had gone, of 2008, I should say, gold had gone to $1,250, an increase of 213% during almost that same period of time within about a three-month period. So while we saw the economy perking along during that period, gold actually went up more than double what the Dow went up, and the Dow had climbed 94%.
Well,
so I guess you could call it an investment from that standpoint.
Well, Craig, you know, I think why I like talking about it is because I think you don't even need to be an expert to go, this is a weird economy. I mean, you know, look at the housing market. You know, real estate, they used to be the best investment, the most, you know, and look at what's happened there. I mean, I can't tell you how many friends I have whose houses are underwater. You know,
right.
So in terms of if you have an investment portfolio, it seems to me like that's just, it makes good sense for that to be part of it, is all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say, although we don't call gold an investment, we really call it an insurance hedge because during that same period of time, you know, the dollar had gone down. The dollar's gone down over 35% and struggling in this area to hold support, you know, as we speak, from breaking to new lows, although we have come off of that in the last couple of weeks. And so it is definitely just an it's a hedge against uncertainty. But, you know, gold's taking on the role of a currency these days. If we went back to 2001, when the dollar was at 121.50 and today we're around 78, and gold went from, 300 range to where it is today. Gold is up about five times what it was during that period of time. And it's so the dollar really, in essence, has maybe lost, this is an arguable fact, but it's close, maybe five times its purchasing power since 2001.
Right.
So, the gold is simply reflecting a loss of purchasing power in the dollar.
I think the point is it's just an uncertain time economically for a lot of people. And you don't have to fearmonger like some of our friends on the right do about why, you make certain investments. So, and I want to take a second to thank you, because I know that you've supported a lot of our progressive shows for a long time, and our listeners like to support people that support us. So, and I think we should also point out, the top rating from the Better Business Bureau, and, I think I got a little annoyed at people giving buying gold a bad name, some of our friends on the right, when, I just think that what you guys do over at ITM Trading is really good. 1-888 own gold, correct, the number?
Right. And, Jim Rickard is on our website. We have an interview there with Jim Rickard, and Jim Rickard's like an insider, and I'm telling you that, this guy is brilliant. I studied the markets. Jim is brilliant. And Jim talks about gold going to $5,000 to $7,500 an ounce just based on eighth grade math. And we don't have time to go into this total interview, but I'd recommend that people go and listen to that interview and listen to Jim's credentials and look him up on the internet.
What's the website?
It's www.itmtrading.com.
Terrific. Craig, we appreciate it. We've got to go back to the President's Press Conference. Thanks so much as always for your time.
Thanks, Steph.
All right. There he goes, Craig Griffin.
Yay!
1-888 own gold. And it has nothing to do with the caliphate, why you should buy...
No.
They're beautiful, my Double Eagle gold coins. All right, let's check back in with the press conference. See what
the
president...
Adverse effect on our economic recovery. It'd be destabilizing at a time when I think everybody is hopeful that we can start growing this economy quicker. So I'm looking forward to having a conversation. But the key here is for people to be practical and not to score political points. That's true for all of us.
The Republicans are down with that.
I think if we take that approach, we can navigate the situation short term and then deal with the problem long term. With respect to Mr. Davis, our diplomat in Pakistan, we've got a very simple principle here that every country in the world that is party to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations has upheld in the past and should uphold in the future. And that is if our diplomats are in another country, then they are not subject to that country's local prosecution. We respect it with respect to diplomats who are here. We expect Pakistan, that's a signatory, and
all right.
Recognize...
We will check back in. Mitch McLiplis, as you can imagine, Jim, not down with the new budget plan.
This budget abdicates the future. It spends too much, taxes too much, and borrows too much. It says that the president does not have the will or the ability to do what we need to do with the money that we have.
Which is, give it all to me, and I'll spend it for you. I'm very frugal. I live on lettuce, as you know. I don't have a fancy terrarium.
No.
This is business as usual at a time when bold and creative solutions are needed.
For example,
this is not an I got the message budget. It's unserious and it's irresponsible.
Wow. Not nearly as responsible as blindly swinging a meat axe, mm-hmm. as one economist mm-hmm. called their budget.
Yep. Oh, are you okay over there?
It's unserious.
Yes.
These are serious times. We need serious people to solve our problem.
A meat axe is very serious.
We have serious problems
to solve.
All
right, don't do it to him. Jim can't take one more.
Yeah, I can't either.
All right. Paul Ryan with his meat axe.
People eat the lettuce.
Our problem is we are running out of road to keep kicking this can down. And so what did we just get today? We got a punt. The president punted on the budget, and he punted on the deficit and on the debt. That's not leadership. That's an abdication of leadership.
Yes. Why can't we hurt poor people and women and children more, for God's sakes?
Why can't we play kick the can more?
Yes.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. It would be better doing nothing than if we would actually pass this budget for the sake of our economy, for the sake of our future, and for the sake of jobs. If we keep punting like this budget does, then there will come a moment where it is too late.
Oh, shush. There's compromise for you. We should do nothing. We're not doing anything.
He's a bit of a whiner, isn't he, that Ryan guy?
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, can I have some love music, please? We finally got an answer to the kids and Valentine's, what the policy is. You had some forced socialistical, you have to give everyone a Valentine policy.
Everybody had to give everybody else a Valentine.
Yeah, I think you had to do that in mine.
But you went to school in Germany.
Well, no, there was no Valentine's Day.
Oh.
I was in Catholic school. You were on your own.
Well, that's weird because Saint Valentine is a Catholic saint, and so...
There was no forced...
Wow.
Yeah. Lisa on Kids and Valentine's, we had a huge argument at my house over the kindergartner's Valentine's. The rule was to give all or none. Mm-hmm. My toothless redneck truck driver husband declared that our son should not give Valentine's to the boys because it might make them gay, and giving same-sex Valentine's was icky. So the rest of the household responded, number one, you're an idiot. These are G-Force dollar Valentine's that say, be my friend. Number two, so... My son thought nothing of it. Indeed, his favorite Valentine was from a boy. It was his favorite because Bumblebee the Transformer was on it.
Who wouldn't love Bumblebee the Transformer?
Yes, nothing to do with who gave it to him. Adults hang-ups teach the kids to look for all that extra nonsense. Finally, admitting his error, my husband presented me with a card that read, thank you for loving me even when I'm a poopy head. All right. That's a beautiful Valentine's Day.
I think they didn't emphasize St. Valentine in Catholic school because it could lead to sex.
Dirty sex. There's a direct line there from construction paper to
to fornication.
Doing the nasty, absolutely.
Ours were all store-bought, really cheap ones. You know, the cartoon characters of the day, like Dino Mutt. And, it was,
Okay.
No thanks.
All right. Hillary Clinton on what is happening in Iran.
We would call to account the Iranian government that is once again using its security forces and resorting to violence to prevent the free expression of ideas from their own people.
What should we do, John Bolton? Oh, I thought so. Okay, Hillary Clinton.
What we see happening in Iran today is a testament to the courage of the Iranian people and an indictment of the hypocrisy of the Iranian regime.
That's one to keep our eye on, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes. No foreign policy expert I, but I'm just saying, that one seems... All right, 45 minutes after the hour, back with Celebrity Stack and more as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God, that's kind of hot.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Jim, crotchety old person discussion alert. Lady Gaga just topped Billboard's list of acts that generated the most income for 2010. She earned $30.5 million last year for that songwriting for Gaga.
It's actually a very, very good song.
I'm just saying songwriters not what they used to be.
She's no Hoagy Carmichael.
$30 million.
Yeah, what hits are the Doobie Brothers putting out nowadays? Come on.
Okay.
When was the last time the Rolling Stones had a hit?
$30 million.
A couple years ago.
A hit?
See, there you go.
A hit or an album? That they put out.
Well, okay.
By the way, I like that new group that you just won the Grammy, because as you know, yesterday, Valentine's Day, Chris, it was 1:15, and I was a little drunk. Although mine in the middle of the afternoon.
Yes. Because the song assumes that it's in the, 1:15 in the morning.
Well, but they assume people that don't go to bed at
stupid o'clock.
And get up at
insane o'clock.
Thanks.
Yeah. Lady Antebellum is there.
All
yes.
Right. How do you say her name now? TikTok girl?
Kesha.
Kesha. She tells Vanity Fair she brushes her teeth with Jack Daniels. Mm. Oh, no, sure you don't.
Well, that was the opening line of her first song, TikTok.
Yes.
That she brushes her teeth with Jack. And
yes, and she said that it's antibacterial and better than morning breath. And I think she's just trying to sound cool and pop music-y.
I can't stand Kesha. Everything she does is auto-tune within an inch of its life, and she tries to put on this fake persona of being a dirty party girl, when in fact she is absolutely not a... She is a suburban girl from Nashville.
I do brush my teeth with Chardonnay, just so you know, just for the Stephanie Miller Show fun facts. I'm not trying to be a dirty party girl, I am.
Even her persona is auto-tuned.
Yes, her persona is completely auto-tuned.
Well, this is exciting, Jim. A German cross-eyed opossum will pick the Oscar winners.
Oh.
Well, then,
well, he has the same.
The Academy's work is done here.
Yeah.
Germany's celebrity cross-eyed opossum, Heidi, has been recruited by
Hollywood.
Why are there
no films about cross-eyed opossums?
Heidi will appear on Jimmy Kimmel Live to predict the Oscar winners. Her celebrity grew into an international sensation, echoing the global fame of the late Octopus Paul. Yes. Who predicted the World Cup? Yeah, he correctly tipped each of Germany's World Cup soccer matches.
And the final game between Holland and Spain. He got that one right, too.
Although, you know, there's a lot of arms. He may have been pointing to something else that looked, you know, I mean, because you kind of could.
No, he had to open a box.
Oh,
actually,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
it wasn't like he was pointing at something.
No, he was actually pointing
Which arm? Oh, well, that arm was pointing at the right thing. Cross-eyed opossum. Oh, boy. All right. Well, you know, Ron Christie's right once in a while. All right. Come on.
Gladly the cross-eyed bear.
Exactly. So I saw the headline. I got all excited that Tiger Woods did something disgusting. I'm like, oh, more disgusting than the story about taking a woman's Tampax out in a parking lot. And I don't know, whatever that whole... No, he's just spit on a green, on a putting green.
You got to find a huge amount of money
for
that.
Yes, and the European Tour got all prissy and fined him. Like, compared to everything else he's done?
Wasn't it in Dubai or something like that? You're just not allowed to spit.
I spit every day on my hike. In fact, a guy the other day went He went nice one. I was like, sorry. I didn't see anybody. Yes, I sometimes get, you know, when you're exercising.
You have no manners.
Listen, I got a standing ovation from the chatting room yesterday for my burp when I was recording commercials after the show.
Yeah, that you did.
You had to play it back for them. They were so impressed.
Yes. I auto-tuned it. Just like Kesha. To make you sound like a dirty party girl.
Oh, I don't know if he's going to need the squeezy music for this, but does Barbara Walters have the hots for Jennifer Aniston? Not maybe the girl-on-girl you were hoping for, Jim, but...
Barbara Walters?
She brought up the fact that Aniston wears a bikini in her new movie, Just Go With It. Walter said, I mean, the body's gorgeous. The body is gorgeous. Wow.
Really gorgeous.
Wow.
Go so far as to say delicious.
Joy Behar said, we always tease her. She's a big lesbian. Doesn't know it. Walter said, not true. Bisexual, whatever. Aniston just said, you just got outed on The View. Walter said, if I were going to, it might be ho. If I were going to go with it, it might be.
You just gave me an image of a naked Barbara Walters that I really didn't need in my head. Thank you.
I apologize. I just wanted to sit lesbian. Okay. Oh, dear. Sue normally in Rockville writes from Tel Aviv. Steph, night flight D.C. to Frankfurt, not one, not two, but three, not three, but four babies on Screaming Baby Airlines. Oh, that's a long flight.
Wow.
I finally figured out, like a relay race, this was a coordinated 4x1 hour screaming baby marathon. Instead of them passing a baton, one would scream for an hour, then pass the scream baton to the next one. Ugh. They do seem to be, you know what? That's a caliphate. That is some sort of creepy, that's, they've been infiltrated, I think, by the Muslim Brotherhood.
They have like a...
Because there is some kind of code.
Or maybe it's like a time card. So, morning, Sam. You want to hit the time?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, your turn.
Okay,
fourth hour, I thought I would go out a la Stephen Smith with a parachute, grab a chute, wrestle open an emergency hatch, grab a six-pack. I mean, dropping into the Atlantic in the middle of night, how much worse could it be? But I chickened out. I'm now in Israel with 25 members of my family who hold at least 30 different opinions, and I'm afraid to come home. What should I do? Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan, Stephanie, I don't know, sir.
These are not the screaming babies you're looking for.
I don't know. Right-wing relative screaming babies, I don't know.
I got a tweet yesterday from someone saying that he was sitting at Screaming Baby Panera Bread.
Yeah.
Restaurants like that tend to have screaming.
Yeah.
Oh, they even have baby. You can't escape them. There's babies in bars now, as you know.
Yeah. With guns.
Look at you. You have a baby.
In a bar.
Yeah. Yay! Andrew Breitbart got served with a lawsuit. At least something else fun happened at CPAC. By Shirley Sherrod. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yay for her. You know, she's the former agriculture department employee who lost her job because of that video that he edited to look like she had discriminated against a white farmer when the reality was the, what's the word I'm looking for, Jim? Opposite, the opposite of that, the opposite. Mr. Breitbart said he categorically rejects the transparent effort to chill his constitutionally protected free speech.
Right. You're free to speak, but we're free to call you out and sue you when you lie and destroy someone's reputation.
Shoddy journalism, free speech. Shoddy journalism.
I hope he won't be invited on Bill Maher's show anymore.
Oh, I know.
Someone in the chat room just says they hope Breitbart's mugshot looks like Nick Nolte's.
All right. We should post this piece. Hang on. Where is it? Because we had Ron Reagan on today, and I thought this was a great piece by our friend Larry Korb. He says, recently I appeared on CNBC to discuss the crisis in Egypt. I received an email from a listener asking how someone who served 5 years in the Reagan administration could now work at a progressive liberal think tank like the Center for American Progress. The answer is pretty simple. Reagan was much more of a progressive than many of those celebrating his 100th birthday now admit, particularly those who supported the policies of the administration of George W. Bush. Like Obama, Reagan was against dumb wars. He resisted pressure from conservative members of his party to send some 25,000 troops to Central America to thwart what they claimed was an imminent Soviet communist expansion into that area. You know, then he talks about Lebanon, which we talked to Ron Reagan about. One after another, you know, the deficit, tax cuts. It is amazing, all these people claiming the Reagan mantle that don't really believe in anything that he actually did. All right, that's it for us.
What was I thinking?
Hump Days with Al Sparks is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yay! That's it for us. I'd like to thank Chris LaVoy, Jim Ward, and Rebecca Taylor. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.